in the airport, and people are like recognizing me. I don't think the blonde hair hurts it either, but it's pretty cool that people are just excited. I mean, I had like an 80-year-old lady on my plane today say, "You girls just did so good. You inspired everybody. We're so proud of you, girlfriend." And she's like 80 watching women's soccer. So, I mean, and you can't ask for anything more than that. I mean, I think that, you know, our passion for the game and just the way we play was really transpired, you know, all the way across the Atlantic back home.
That's a hell of an 80-year-old woman impersonation right there. Have you practiced that?
Yeah, well, I was on a flight down to Florida today, so there was quite a few of them going on. I had a little practice this morning.
Oh, Megan, speaking of celebrity, are you aware of the Megan Rapinoe song that was a bit of a hit on YouTube?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We caught wind of that when we were over in Germany, actually. It's pretty good, actually. Props to the guy who made it. It's actually pretty good. It's quite funny.
Well, let me ask you one more about the World Cup. Again, everyone's probably going to remember that Brazil goal. I wanted to know, is that your personal highlight, or do you remember more the penalty you took against Brazil? Are you going to remember starting? What's going to be your big memory?
Ooh, just winning that game against Brazil. Obviously, that play, but I think that whole game, you look at that, at everything that happened, and we scored in the first minute, and then the last minute, and then I always kind of forget, but we played down a man for nearly an hour.
Yeah.
And our back line was just unbelievable. So I think just that whole game and the kind of the culmination of the whole game, and then the gravity that the game took on, and we were basically 30 seconds away from packing our bags and going home, leaving Germany. So I think just that whole game was something that's so special, and you know, may never happen to me again.
Working in the bakery as hot as about 103. Going animals every day, and I got jobs to get paid. Same routine every time, we'll quit that job and love to know. And if I can do that, I can show the worst of the things you need to know. You got a slice, you got a back, you got a one little in town. You got a slice, you got a back, you got a one little in town. Speed it up now.
That was Megan Rapinoe from the U.S. Women's National Team. We interviewed her this past Sunday. And if you did want to listen to more of that interview, where would you find it, Taylor?
You would find it at our website. That's TotalSoccerShow.com. It's the most recent show. It's called Copa America Final Review and Megan Rapinoe Interview. That's some nice rhyming there from Mr. Daryl Grove. So that's on the website. Coming up on the podcast, we're going to be interviewing DC United beat writer Travis Clark. He also covers Major League Soccer, some U.S. soccer. So we're going to get into all things Major League Soccer with him. That's on the podcast. But right now, seems like we're running out of time on the radio segment of the show. So I will just say goodbye, Josh.
And also, don't forget, for our podcast listeners, we're not going to do a game of the week. So don't be expecting that two of us are out of town this weekend. Sorry, Taylor.
Yeah. So I'm left in Richmond by myself. So I will not be doing a show, but we will be back next Thursday. So until then, now you can say goodbye, Josh.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. We'll talk to you soon.
Coming up shortly is Mental Health Matters. WRAR is sponsoring the third annual Johnny Z Festival, a celebration of art, music, and community on Saturday, August 13th from noon to 5 p.m. on Shields Avenue between Grove and Hanover. This block party features the Bazaar Market, local arts and crafts, children's activities, live music from Josh Small, photosynthesizers, the No BS Brass Band, and WRAR DJs. Activities like printmaking, button making, and a photo booth will allow festival goers to create a one-of-a-kind souvenir. The Johnny Z Festival is free and open to the public. For more information, you can visit art180.org or call 233-4180. The Really, Really Free Market is a monthly event in Monroe Park where Richmonders come to share their access books, excess books, clothes, food, music, skills, and more. The Really, Really Free Market is on the last Saturday of every month from noon till 3 p.m. at the corner of Main and Laurel. This market is not about bartering, selling, or discounting. All items are 100% free. No one has to bring something to get something. Everyone can take what they would like, regardless of their contribution. You can call 804-303-5449 or visit rvaradicalendar.blogspot.com for more information. You are listening to WRIR LP 97.3 FM Richmond. And now for Mental Health Matters.
This is Dale Moskowitz, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. I appreciate you tuning in. We're having a little bit of a technical rearranging, so bear with me for just 1 second, and I will get started. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. here on WRIR LP 97.3 FM on your dial in Richmond, Virginia. I'm Gail Moskowitz. I'm your host for Mental Health Matters, and I've been working as a clinical social worker in Richmond, Virginia for over 30 years, and I feel privileged to spend the time that I do working with the people that I do, and it's been and I enjoy doing the show, and today I'm going to talk about one of the subjects that's close to my heart, and that's a subject in reference to people who struggle with food and issues around food and eating, not eating, when to eat, how to keep your weight down, how to keep your weight up. Last week we began the conversation about eating disorders when we spoke about bulimia and anorexia. But today I'm going to talk about something that probably hits home even more for a lot of people. And that's the issue of dieting, not dieting, what to eat, what not to eat, when to eat, when not to eat. All of the confusion and conflicted advice that we get around food, and I'm going to speak a little bit to you today about why diets are not so good for people, and I'll get to that in just a moment. So as I said, this is Mental Health Matters, and this is Gail Moskowitz. Each week, I talk about issues related to mental health. I talk about sex and sexuality sometimes. Sometimes I talk about interpersonal relations, addiction. I like to talk about healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and honest life, a life that feels fulfilling, a life that feels that feels as if it has meaning, that we understand how we plug into the larger world. Next week, I'm going to continue the conversation about eating disorders, and I have a lovely young lady who is going to come speak to us who struggled with bulimia and anorexia, more anorexia. She wrote a book, and she really healed from this, and she's got a lot to say, and she's just a lovely young woman, and I hope you'll tune in next week to hear her. If you are not able to listen to the show as I am speaking right now on your radio dial, you can always get onto our website, www.wrir.org, and click on my show, Mental Health Matters, and you can listen to this show in real time. If you're not able to listen to it now, you can always go back to listen to the show. anytime by getting onto my website through WRIR's website, or send me an email at UR, those are the letters, UR, and the words mentalhealthmatters@gmail.com, UR, mentalhealthmatters@gmail.com, and I will send you a link to my website where you can figure out how to register for my podcast, which is new and exciting, and I'm beginning to get the hang of making it happen. So today I said I was going to talk about issues in that have to do with eating, how much to eat, when to diet, when not to diet. And I said that I didn't think diets were particularly good for us. And I'm going to speak in one moment about that. I just want to say that if you would like to talk to me today, please feel free to give us a ring at 649-9737, 649-9737. And I'd love to respond to your question. So, why are diets not so good for us? Well, let me explain that one of the issues around dieting is that they rely on an individual dieting in a compulsive way. So, what I say to people a lot is that when you are in a habit of dieting, and I'm sure you've heard the term yo-yo dieting. So, when you're in the habit of yo-yo dieting, on a diet, off a diet, you're either on a diet or you have gone back to giving yourself permission to eat out of control. So what diets rely on is that you are going to plug into that part of you that compulsively is going to follow the rules of the diet, capital D, capital I, capital E, capital T. You're going to follow the rules of the diet. Well, what I know about compulsivity is that the flip side of compulsivity is impulsivity. So you're going to either be on a diet and follow the rules, or you're going to not be on a diet and you're not going to follow the rules. So you wind up losing all the weight on this diet, and then you're going to wind up gaining all the weight back when you go off the diet and you have now given yourself permission to eat whatever you want. So I'm either on a diet or eating out of control. That's a compulsive habit. And this is what happens then. When you're on a diet, instead of your adult, competent mind making decisions about what you're going to eat, the part of you that takes over is that part that Freud used to call our superego. You know, that part of you that says, don't do that, do this, do it better. Why'd you do it this way? And so then once your superego has kicked in, you've shifted from your adult competent place and you've begun to make decisions from, if I don't do this right, I am somehow going to get in trouble. And you shift into that place where another voice is telling you how to do this. And diets, because they got to make some money, so they got to make it sound like it's something new and different, they give you all these rules. And I'm going to give you my favorite rule. A very, very famous diet we're all, I'm sure, have heard of, this Weight Watchers. And I remember in the old days when I would treat people who were struggling with issues around food, and I would get them to write down what they ate, and I'd look on their sheet and they'd say there would be half a banana, and I'd say, what did you do with the other half? And they'd say, well, I threw it out, or I put it in the refrigerator and tried to eat it in the morning. And I'd say, well, why'd you only eat half a banana? Because Weight Watchers said you could only have half a banana. So the rules were so stringent that for breakfast you could only eat half a banana. And you had to follow that rule because your superego is now taking over telling you how to eat, and you got to follow the rules. And you're a really good rule follower when you're in that compulsive place and you're only eating half a banana. Well, you want to know what the flip side to eating half a banana is? It's eating an entire bunch of bananas slathered in peanut butter and eaten while you're still eating a Reese's peanut butter cup. That's what the other flip side of it is. The rule of eating half a banana is insane. But they have to kind of come up with a diet, a plan. Well, we know something about food. We do. We know that if we eat properly, eat a certain amount of calories a day, vary our foods, eat more fresh than not fresh, get 5 get 5 servings of vegetables and fruits in a day, and get a certain amount of exercise that we'll be able to maintain our weight, and we'll lose weight, we'll maintain our weight. But if we think there's some magic to any one of the diets out there, and let me just mention the multi-million dollar diet industry, they have to come up with something that looks new and different. And what I know about people who diet is that they are either so happy with themselves that they've lost this diet, or so sad that they're beginning to gain the weight back. This is Gail Moskowitz, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm talking today about eating disorders, specifically disorders of compulsive eating today, because last week I talked about anorexia and bulimia, and next week I'm going to have a young lady who's going to come on and talk about her struggle with bulimia. She's with anorexia. She's a lovely woman. I really do hope you tune in. But today I'm talking about compulsive eating, and right now I'm talking about why diets are not particularly good for us. This is 97.3 FM, WRIR, here in Richmond, Virginia. If you'd like to get in touch with me today, please feel free to call 649-9737. So let's go back to compulsive eating, okay? One of the things about compulsive eating is that we have very, again, confused notions. So first, we're talking about dieting, and why I say dieting isn't good for us. Because people who go on diets all the time are either dieting or giving themselves permission to eat out of control. Now, let me give you another little glimpse of confusion around food, okay? We live in a culture where food is so unbelievably available that, you know, if any of you, I'm sure if a lot of you have traveled, I'm sure a lot of you have not traveled. You know what it's like to live in a developing world country, or even in you know, a second world country. Food is not that available. I remember going with my husband on a medical trip that he goes to, and I remember on this particular day where we were not available during the day when the lunch was served, and then we were not available during the day when the dinner was served. There was nowhere else to get food. We just didn't get to eat for the rest of the day. Not because we didn't have the money to buy it. It's that it wasn't available. So, you know, we live in a community where food is so available, and it's packaged and it's marketed to you all over the place. Constantly drive down Broad Street and look to see what is available in living color. So much food. It's cheap, it's available, and it is all over the place. And guess what? So much of that food is really not good for anyone. It's full of sodium, it's full of calories, it's full of fat. Not that there aren't things that are good for you to eat or that you don't make those decisions occasionally. I'm sure you do. But we all know what happens if you have, you know, if you're going to a fast food restaurant. Well, I'm in McDonald's. I might as well eat, you know, the French fries. Those are really good. Or whatever it is, but it's there, and it's they're selling it to you. They've been doing this for a very long time. So first we get that. We get access to food. There's so much good food. There's sweet food and salty food, and oh my God, there's so much good food. So that food, when we eat it, gives us tremendous pleasure. Think about it for a second. Think about how good it feels to eat something that tastes really good. You know, I exercised this morning and I was really hungry when I made my wrap for lunch. I had a no carb wrap thing, and I melted a little bit of non-fat cheese and I wrapped it up in some thin turkey slices. And so I had this beautiful wrap. You know, it's low calories and good for you. And I was really hungry and I ate it and I thought, oh my God, this tastes good. It was just really, really good. Food, when we're hungry, really tastes good. Food, well prepared, really tastes good. And what it does is it turns on our pleasure center. You know, that part of your brain that goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. It turns us on. And then what happens is that we want to get back to that because it was good and it's really available. So we can begin to get addicted to the pleasure it gives us to eat. And if we don't have that part of us that's grounded and knows how to manage our impulses and make decisions in a monitored kind of way, we can begin to get habituated, to get pulled in, to turning that pleasure center on every time we want to soothe ourselves. It gets linked in to our soothing place. And there's a million reasons for it. One, we just said food is all over the place. Two, food tastes good and it stimulates our pleasure center. Food's plugged into everything we do, to celebrations, to misery. There isn't a thing that food isn't connected to. And then, very, very clearly, we need to eat. This is not something we can just stop doing. It's not like you can just quit smoking or quit drinking alcohol. You can't quit eating. So you have to come to terms with it. And you are constantly in that place where you're figuring out how much stimulation you're going to take in vis-a-vis food, how much you're allowed to use food to celebrate, how much you're allowed to use food to soothe the problems or make the pain go away. You have to have a balanced relationship with it. And a lot of people don't. So we are in a culture where food is all around us. We're in a culture of dieting that triggers us into overeating. We're in a culture of confusion about what we're supposed to be eating and not eating. One, that comes from the diet industry. And two, that comes from people who want to tell you you're only allowed to eat green food. That's really healthy for you. Well, that was last week's news. This week, oh no, only pink food. That's the only thing that's good for you. It's crazy to begin to micromanage every crumb you put in your mouth. The bottom line is if you eat a healthy array of foods from all the different food groups, if you're a vegetarian, great. You have to make sure you find a way to get your protein in that's not carb-related and starchy. Because that can become just, there are plenty of vegetarians who are much larger and are carrying around much more weight than they would like to. So you got it, whether you're a vegetarian or you eat meat, because I'm not making those rules for people. Whatever it is you do, it needs to be done in moderation with a consciousness about how many calories you're taking in. You need to be eating foods you enjoy eating, because otherwise, you're going to feel deprived and aggravated, and then you're going to go to that flip dark side where, okay, now I'm deprived, now I'll eat anything I want. Now I'm deprived, now I'll eat anything I want. Have to find a response to this. And let me tell you something. This is easier for me to say than it is for you to do, because now we're talking about compulsive eating, where people are so habituated to using food to make the pain go away that it becomes an out-of-control addictive disorder for them. And there are a lot of people out there who are struggling with this, and they're embarrassed by it. And, of course, you know, being overweight in this society, one, there's a lot of obesity in this society, and we want to work to make sure that people are living in a healthy weight category. But on the other hand, there is so much prejudice towards people who struggle with their weight. The things we say about and to people who are struggling with their weight, it's not an addiction you can hide from. You can secretly drink. You can't secretly be obese. And it becomes part and parcel of their addictive disorder, because we have to remember that what underscores addiction is shame and isolation. So if you can't isolate yourself because you're obese and everyone can see it, you begin to isolate yourself in shame in your head all the time. Again, you know, let's go back to Freud's superego, where it's saying to you, bad person, bad person, bad person. Look at you, look at you, look at you. And that is no way. We tend not to take care of ourselves when we feel that bad about ourselves. We tend to make much better decisions about taking care of ourselves, about eating properly when we're feeling good about ourselves. So the confusion begins again to add into compulsive eating. And then another thing about compulsive eating is that we have more confusion over what weight you're supposed to be. Now, it's clear that there is a certain amount of weight that we can hold on to that that's, you know, safe and okay, allows you to get around, allows you to be active, allows you to participate, and really is not putting a big strain on your heart, your lungs, your other organs, your knees, your other muscles, all of that stuff. And there, you know, but you see, we live again in this crazy world where so much of us struggle with our weight, and yet the flip side of it is that what we want to be is skinnier than our body really is going to easily be able to sustain. So what I say to people is, when you want to begin to address this compulsive eating cycle, I'm either on a stringent diet eating half a banana or I'm eating out of control, the first thing you want to do is not decide what number you want to weigh. That's a very dangerous goal. It's to decide if today I can eat properly and get some activity, some exercise that's good and healthy for my body today. Can I eat properly? Can I eat less calories today? Can I make a choice today to eat the things that are healthy for me and will allow my body to heal? Because if you set yourself up with that number, I want to get down to 123.6 pounds. What happens once you get down to 123.6 pounds? What happens for that month that your body goes on a little bit of a hiatus and you don't lose weight? And all of a sudden, you're aiming at a goal rather than the goal being to eat properly and exercise. Making a goal in the here and now to change the relationship you have with food and eating properly and exercising is the only antidote to compulsive eating. It cannot be compulsive starving. It cannot be compulsive dieting. It can only be, what can I do today to nurture my body in a healthy, productive way by eating properly and moving my body in some way? And I want to say one more thing in regard to this, and it has to do with what I mean when I say exercise. So if I tell you, you need to move, you need to be active, you need to exercise, I'm not telling you to sign up for an exercise class that's an hour and a half, 6 days a week. And if you, God forbid, miss one class, freak out, never go back. I'm telling you, every day, it is important for us to move our bodies, to be active, and to begin to move toward an exercise routine that you can sustain. If you have signed up for the gym 50 times and never gone, then maybe the gym isn't going to be for you. Maybe what's for you is, maybe you can make a connection and a commitment, not a connection, a commitment. Maybe you can make a commitment to yourself to walk 5 minutes a day. 5 minutes a day, get started. Better than no minutes a day, get started. See how it feels. Today I'm going to walk 5 minutes. Today I'm going to walk 5 minutes outdoors, and I'm going to walk 5 minutes up and down the stairs in my own house. I'm going to do that today. Today I'm going to do TV aerobics. Do you know what TV aerobics are? TV aerobics are when, during your favorite TV show, you make a commitment for, during the time that the show is on, you get yourself some very low free weights, and you just move your hands up and down, you get up and down from the chair, you move your feet up and down, and you make a commitment to just getting your heart rate up while you're watching your favorite sitcom. You make a commitment you can sustain until you feel good about that, and then you move forward to the next thing. maybe you can make a commitment to yourself to go to 1 half-hour exercise class a week and be able to walk once or twice. Every day, eating properly and getting some physical activity back into your life is the beginning of making a commitment to sanity around food and exercise. Dieting isn't. Most people diet themselves into obesity. So, all right. So that's what I wanted to talk about in terms of compulsive eating. But now let's talk about what it is about compulsive eating that is so addictive. Okay. Well, I said already that, you know, we open up that pleasure center, and who doesn't enjoy eating? I mean, not everybody enjoys eating, but most of us enjoy eating. I have to say, I don't enjoy eating as much as other people do. I don't enjoy eating when I'm full. If I'm full, I do not enjoy eating. I don't enjoy the next bite. If I'm halfway through a meal that I'm really enjoying and I'm full, I don't eat anymore because I don't enjoy it anymore. And a lot of people do not have that cutoff mechanism in their heads. So why are some people compulsive eaters? That's number one, okay? Some people do not get the message for whatever's going on with them physiologically. Research has shown that some people don't get that message that they are not hormonally, neurological message that says you're full, stop eating. Some people don't get that. And it just went out of my head I'll look it up later and let you know next week. Some people don't have the physiology that says I'm full, stop eating. Okay. Some people have, that's why they're predisposed to compulsive eating. Some people are predisposed to compulsive eating because they like that feeling of being full. It's almost as if, sometimes I call it an inside hug. They want to feel that just so filled up inside, because it's the only time they feel safe and happy is those few minutes where they've eaten and eaten and eaten. They feel that feeling until the shame and the isolation hit them. And again, so much of why we get habituated to things is the flip side of feeling so horrible about ourselves. Okay, another reason people compulsively eat is that they grew up and food was so associated with love that there was rarely any other expression of love. Everything was associated with food. If they, you know, scratched their knee, their mother gave them a lollipop. If they spent time with their father, he took them to a restaurant. Everything about love was associated with food. Now, love is associated with food. There's no question about it. I like to feed people. It is clearly a way that I express my love for people, is to find out what they like to eat and give that to them. But people who grow up in worlds where there is no other expression of love except for food, this becomes very difficult for them to sort out. And the fourth thing is that if you're feeling bad about yourself, and let's talk about women who feel as if they're not going to be chosen, women who feel as if they're not going to be chosen because they do not have a healthy relationship with their bodies. Women who feel like they're not going to be chosen, they don't have a healthy relationship with their bodies, and they did not have a healthy relationship with their opposite sex parent. These people are sometimes very predisposed to be compulsive eaters because it nourishes them, and it's just something that becomes entrenched in people's thinking. And it happens very early on. And unfortunately, you know, we've seen this over and over again. For boys, what happens is that when they're young and they're active and they're able to eat huge amount of calories, and as they get into adulthood, they are no longer able to sustain those calories, and they get heavy, and they have no idea what to do to stop eating so much. So lots of reasons people become compulsive eaters. We've named lots of them today. The dieting world, too much food around. So I talked a little bit about how to begin to make sanity out of food and eating, and it's to stop making so many rules, not to make more rules, not to find the magic diet. It is to stop making so many rules, stop thinking that I'm fat or I'm on a diet, so therefore I can't eat cake ever again. You know, one of the things that I say to people a lot is that you know, you have this thing in your head, which is, I'm on a diet, I can't eat, you know, Oreos. I'm not allowed to ever eat Oreos again until I'm not on a diet, and then I have to eat all of them because I am going to go back on the diet. And what I say to people is, you know what? The Nabisco company is not going to stop making Oreos. They'll always be there. The food will always be there. So, you know, how you begin to make sense is to stop making so many rules about food. A, stop taking the foods that you do enjoy off of your list of foods you can ever eat again. Leave them on there. If you're a person who absolutely to die for loves French fries, well, guess what? French fries, that's not a good food to eat every day. I wouldn't suggest eating it every day. But I certainly wouldn't suggest telling yourself you can never eat French fries again because you're fat. That makes no sense. So less rules. One thing that is really important to hear is that there is support out there for you. I don't know if you know this, but there's a 12-step program for people who really have severe eating issues, and I think it's very helpful. There's a few things about the program that I particularly don't like, and they talk a lot about foods people are allergic to, and I'm not sure I buy into all of that. I'm not saying that people aren't allergic to foods. They are, but you know, or if you ever eat wheat, then you can never, if you eat a little bit of wheat, you get the taste in your mouth and you can't tolerate keeping yourself back from eating more and more of it. I understand that. But to then say you're allergic to that, I don't really buy into that. Allergies are ascertained by being assessed by an allergist. What you might be allergic to. I can say that you may not be able to handle it, and you might need to take one or two of those things off your list of things that you can eat. But I believe that we're really doing a much better job of integrating foods into our... I think we get healthier if we can integrate food. Although, if you are a person that can absolutely never eat sugar, then maybe you need to come up with a different plan. But I'm not going to go into the nitty-gritty of that right now. Overeaters Anonymous is a 12-step group for people who have severe compulsive eating problems, and you can certainly get on their website and look that up. There are some other resources in the community. One of the things I wanted to say is, if you've been on 100 diets and none of them work, maybe you need to go talk to somebody in a different way. And instead of honing in on food and calories, maybe you need to begin to look at some of the psychological issues that sustain this pull to overeating. And maybe you need to begin to look at this issue from more of the perspective of addictive disorder than character defect. People who eat too much or eat compulsively do not have a character defect. They're not bad people. They're people who are habituated to overeating and compulsive eating. The flip side of compulsive eating is not eating at all. And we talked a lot about that last week. And we're going to talk about anorexia next week. I do hope you tune in for that. I think it'll be an interesting show. There are two more things I want to say about compulsive eating. And one of them is that compulsive eating can be part of looking at a full spectrum of bulimia, because people who binge eat and then don't eat, or binge eat and then throw up, but I'm not even talking about people who actually purge. I'm talking about people who actually vomit to purge. I'm talking about people who binge eat, where they eat a rapid amount of food at one time and then go the whole next day not eating at all. That is a form of bulimia. And I really want to encourage you, if you are in that kind of a cycle with your food, you really to get some help, because it's hard. You can't address that specifically by going on a diet. It just, I mean, you're really going to get yourself messed up. That is a form of bulimia, where you, so binge eating is important. If you binge eat, there might be something else going on with you. If you're a grazer and you're eating a little bit all day long, it might be on some level that you are self-medicating with food all day long. You've put yourself in somewhat of an altered state by putting food into your system, which I'm not going to go into the physiology of how you break down food, but it really does change you. It shifts your brain chemistry. This is Gail Moskowitz. We're talking today about binge eating and compulsive eating and why dieting isn't good for you. I hope you'll tune in next week at 1 o'clock on Thursday, when we're going to talk about anorexia. And I have a young lady on who is going to talk about healing from anorexia. She also wrote a book. I hope to have all that information on my website. I think I have finally figured out how to get everything archived. And currently, all my shows are archived on my website, on my podcast. So please go and subscribe to the podcast. This is Gail Moskowitz. You're listening to Mental Health Matters here on WRIR 97.3 FM here in Richmond, Virginia. Tune in next week. Thank you for listening.
Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Ain't got no place to lay your head. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry. Be happy.
That was Mental Health Matters, and now coming up is War News Radio. Sorry. More music.
From Swarthmore College.
From Swarthmore College, this is...
This is...
This is...
This is War News Radio.
I'm Stuart Russell.
And I'm Sarah Dwider.
This week on War News Radio, the drone debate. We first hear about controversial CIA drone strikes in Pakistan.
Then, we look into the global drone technology industry.
Finally, we hear expert opinions about the future of warfare.
But first, a roundup of this week's news.
French Foreign Minister Alain Juppé stated that international powers are now ready to let Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi stay in Tripoli if he steps down from power. Juppé also said that a NATO ceasefire would follow Gaddafi's surrender. This speech suggests recognition by NATO leaders that it would be hard, if not impossible, to force Gaddafi out of the country. However, Libya's foreign minister, Abdelhadi Obeidi, dismissed France's proposal, saying that Gaddafi's departure from power was not a matter of discussion.
During his recent tour of Iraq, U.S. Defense Secretary Leon Panetta repeatedly stressed that Iraqi officials must come to a consensus over the necessity of American troop involvement in Iraq and, if needed, request support beyond the December 2011 deadline established by the Obama administration. Iraqi officials have remained gridlocked over the decision, but the United States does not intend to